All right, guys, we're gonna start learning. Hi, everybody. Okay, so just to quickly sum up last time, right? Last time we were talking about the nature of the soul according to Judaism. We went through some biblical sources, some mitzvah sources, some perushim on the mitzvah sources that discussed, again, the difference between your soul and your body and your mind and your body. We talked about near-death experiences a little bit. And then we went a little bit, I think we touched on Rav Dessler, right? Last time, who we're going to go into much more this time. And again, we were talking about, like, what does this have to do with tshuva? The basic question of who are we? Are we our mind? Are we our souls? Are we our bodies? Like, who are we? We talked about last time that it really, that is the basic question at play when we talk about tshuva, right? Tshuva is much less. If you look at Vidui, again, if you look at a lot of the sources that talk about tshuva, Rav Lichter points this out generally, if you look at Tefillah, you see that that tshuva is much less about specific individual actions, right? We don't go through 613 mitzvos and klap al chei on the mitzvos. We klap al chei on what we have done to our souls, right? Hirshanu, we've made ourselves corrupted. We've made ourselves evil, right? Hevinu, we've twisted ourselves, right? Those are talking about the impact that our choices have on our souls. And Rav Dessler goes a little bit more into it, and that's what we're going to go into this time, about what's at play, what the process of tshuva is, why what we do impacts our soul and how. And again, it's just like a fascinating little foray that becomes extremely practical in terms of our takeaways about tshuva. So that's our goal for tonight. Okay. So we're gonna be going through Rav Dessler. Google apparently has this really super awesome feature where you can take a picture of something and it gets the text out for you, which is really cool. So I actually have a source sheet, even though it's like I'm reading from Rav Dessler in front of me, but I'm going to give you the source sheet. Hold on a second. These are my Carl Rogers quotes that I couldn't find. But here we go. Okay, Rav Dessler. I'm going to be reading it. It's kind of hard to see. I'm actually going to do it this way, okay? And zoom in. Okay, so here we go. So he starts again. Hachana pnimis l'Rosh Hashanah. The internal work that we have to do in Rosh Hashanah. And he goes like this. Ratzon ha'adam hu mahuso. That's how he starts. The will of a person is his essence, right? What he basically means is that you are what you care about. And that's why Chazal says, Sifrei Chayim v'Sifrei Mesim munachim lefanecha, right? Chazal says, very famous, that Hashem has the book of life and the book of death open for him on Rosh Hashanah. So the obvious question that people ask here is, why do you have the book of death open? I understand why you have the book of life open, but why does the book of death, why is that open? What does that have to do with anything? Hi, Chana, so nice to see you. Your face. Okay, and he says this, Ki kamo she'Sifrei Chayim mosav al ha'chayim behuve. In the same way that when we think of Sifrei Chaim, those who are alive, talks about people who are alive now, and the question is, why Sifrei Mesim? But again, there's all sorts of answers to it, because the dead are judged by their impact on the world, is one of the kind of answers that people have given. But he has a different kind of take on it. Cain gumps b'Sifrei Mesim. Sifrei Mesim is also talking about something that exists right now. Ki yesh asher tochen chayehem, because there are those who the substance of their life, Chaim amitim u'metzius amiti, is real. Basically, is real, is emestic, is truthful. And there are those who their lives lack anything that's real, anything that's substantive. And because their life has no substance to it, they're actually already dead. So what did he do just there? What did he do? Ah, hello Rachel Ephraim, hello Bacheva Feldman. Right, what did he do just there? He took Sifrei Chaim and Sifrei Mesim, and he said, these are not nouns. We are not talking about those who are dead or those who are alive. Sifrei Chaim and Sifrei Mesim is an adjective. Every person is either dead or alive as an adjective. Those who are alive have lives that are filled with substance. Those who are dead have lives that are filled with nothing. Okay, and then he goes on. And this is the introduction of his next paragraph. Here we go. I'm sharing my screen again. Mahus ha'adam nish'eres l'achar hamisa. The essence of a person stays after death. And again, this is where it starts getting interesting. I was talking to one of you last time, called me after the last chabura, and was like, this is a really important thing to talk about, and it's one of those things that we never talk about. Right? Talking about people's souls, talking about what happens after death, is something that's actually extremely, Yasmin, so nice to see you. It's something that's really important and essential to how we live and how we think about our own selves, and we like never talk about it. And here, Rav Dessler, he's talking about it. He's talking about it in relation to tshuva, and that's why we're here, okay? So here he goes. V'zus l'das, you should know. We should know, guys. This is what he's about to say. Ki ein misas haguf, mishana be'etzem es matzavo ha'pnimi shel ha'adam. Death changes nothing. The death of somebody's body has basically no effect on them. Harusha should be zman shechay havala davaku bedimyon ki sheyifra kisheyifra migufo nisharhu davak bedimyono. Right. Whatever, basically, what he's about to say is that whatever you care about in your life is the same thing that you care about in your death, and he proves it with the Gemara. Okay. He refers to this Gemara. He says, "Ayin b'mesachas brachos b'perek mishameso." Okay. So if you go there and you look up that pasuk, that's what we're about to do. You can see I just switched on my screen. Right now I'm on a source sheet. Gemara brachos 18b. Good. Thank you for nodding, Dina Bracha. Okay, here we go, right? Ready? This is the Gemara that he's talking about. Fascinating, okay? You tell me, it's a story. We're going to read this story. You tell me what this story in Chazal teaches us about what Chazal want us to know about people who are dead. Ready? Here we go. Vatanya, Masa b'chassid echad, there was a pious man, shenasan dinar la'ani be'erev Rosh Hashanah, vishnei b'tzores. Okay, he gives a coin. He gives some money to a poor person in the time of like a drought. So in a time when everyone is poor, he gives a lot, too much money apparently to a poor person, and his wife is extremely upset with him. Hiknitaso ishto. She's really upset with him to the point that halach velon beves akvaros. All right. So this, any of us who are married, any of you who will be married, you could take a big chill pill because none of you have ever made your husband sleep in a graveyard. But that's what happened. His wife was bothering him so much that he went to sleep in a graveyard. And when he was sleeping in the graveyard on apparently Rosh Hashanah, because that was Erev Rosh Hashanah, what does he hear? Shama shte ruchos misapra zolazo. He hears two spirits in the graveyard talking to each other. Amracha de la chaverta. One of them says to the other one, they're both women, apparently young women, and one of them says to her friend, Chaverti, bowi v'nashu ba'olam, v'nishma me'achwer ha'pargod, ma'poranus ba'olam. Let's go, like, fly around the world and see what kind of bad things are going to happen to the world this year. Amar la chaverta, the other one says to her, eini yechola, I can't come with you. Sha'ani kvura b'machzeles shalkanim. I'm buried in this, like, basically embarrassing kind of way to be buried, in like a mat of reeds. It's like it's not a nice way to be buried. It's not halachically incorrect or anything like that. It's just not nice. So she says, I'm not coming. Ela l'chiyat, but you go, umasha anshumas imrili, and just go find out, and then come back and tell me. Hachlahi v'shata uba'a, and she comes, she goes, and then she flies around, and she comes back. Amr l'chaverta, chaverti, mashumat me'achare apargord. What did you hear after this, like, heavenly curtain that separates death and life? Amr l'ah, and the one who went around says to her, shumati shekol hazareya b'revia rishona baran malka oso. Anyone who plants in the first rainy season is going to get, like, struck by hail. Basically, their crops are going to be destroyed. Okay, so this pious man, what does he do? He does what all of us would do, right? He goes home, and he doesn't plant in the first rainy season. He plants in the second rainy season. Halachu v'zara b'revia shania. He plants in the second rainy season. Shal, v'kol ha'olam kulo laka, v'shalo laka. And everyone else's crops are destroyed in the first rainy season, and his aren't. Hi, Rachel Brown. Okay? And so the story actually continues. I didn't want to put all this on the source sheet, right? The story continues that the next Rosh Hashanah, he wisens up. And he goes back to the graveyard, sleeps there again, and the same thing happens with these two women. And they say the opposite. They say, now this time, anyone who plants in the second season, their crops are going to be destroyed, and not in the first season. So he does the opposite. His wife eventually says to him, what's going on? How do you have this, like, premonition about these crops? And he tells her the whole story. And then his wife gets into a fight with the mother of the young woman who's buried in the reeds. And the mother, and the wife says, who apparently is not the most, you know, quality character, says to the mother, oh yeah, well, your daughter is buried in a mat of reeds. And the next Rosh Hashanah, when he goes back, they say to each other, we can't talk because someone knows what we're saying. Okay, and that's how the story ends. Okay, I'm actually going to read you the second one, and then I'm going to say to you, like, what does this teach us, guys? Like, again, if it's not mind-blowing, I don't know what it is. Tanishma, okay, this is, like, again, later on in the same Gemara, in Parak Misha Meso, talking about these dead people and people, whether or not the dead people know or don't know what's going on in the world. Tanishma, This is Aramaic, so you'll forgive me. Diziri Have Mafke Zuze Gabi Ushpiz Chase. Okay, so Rab Zairi, they didn't have banks, I guess, back then, so he used to leave his money by like a certain innkeeper. Ad Asi Azir Leves Rav, and he would go and learn with Rav Shchiva. She dies. The innkeeper dies. Okay, but now he has a problem because he gave her all his money to like hide and keep safe for him, and now she dies and he doesn't have any money left. So what does he do? He does what all of us would do. Azal Basra Lachatzar Mavis. He goes to the graveyard and he summons her up. Amarla, and he says to her, Zuze Hecha, where's my money? Amrale, and she says to him, Zil Shkili, okay, I'm gonna skip this part. He basically says, okay, it's in this certain place underneath the door, you should check in this whatever place, okay? Amrale Leima, and by the way, now that I'm sending you to do something and we're having this chat, she says to him, please go tell my mother, again, a young woman, it's like fascinating, I don't know what this means like in terms of gender, I would love to do a study on this. The Ima Lala Ima, go tell my mother, Tishadar li masrikai ugivtai dechulcha bahade palanisa de asya lemachar. Tell my mom to send a comb and some eye makeup with so-and-so who's going to be here tomorrow. Meaning with so-and-so who's about to die. Please tell my mother to send a comb and some eye makeup with so-and-so who's about to die. So what... From these two stories, what is Chazal telling us? What do we know that Chazal is telling us is the personality of dead people? What did we learn from this?
Can I just say?
Yes.
I'm a little confused just because like, it very much sounds like, you know, like in ancient Egypt, they very much believed in, you know, like when you mummify someone, that you put all like the physical objects so they could take it to like the next world with them, whatever, and like, I just always, like, that's a concept that, like, we make fun of, you know, good. Like, so, like, what does that even mean? Because, like, they good. Can't, like, he's not doing her, so, like, mascara there, you know?
Exactly. So, but what is it? Good, Yasmin, right? We don't believe in that. Like, I don't think Rav Zaira did that. I don't think that he went and told the mother to send what, that doesn't make any sense.
So,
right?
What would that even mean?
So, what does it mean? What do we learn from this? What is true here?
This is so, sorry, go ahead. No, you go ahead. Okay, that, like, the next, like, people in, like, the next world, like, people in Al-Muhaba, like, they know what's going to happen here.
Good. And what? Good. So the first is that they know what's happening, because these two voices, they go around, they know about the hail that's going to hit, right? So they know what's going to happen. But more basic than that, more than that, what? I mean, which parts of this Gemara surprised us that, as Yasmin started, I'm a little confused. That's exactly how you should feel. Because what is this Gemara telling us in a certain capacity? Dina Bracha, yeah, tell me.
That their personalities remain once they go up.
Good. Their personalities remain basically unchanged. Especially the Schmutznik part of their personality. That's what we see here, right? The gossipy girls, after they die, they still want to gossip. That's still what they're interested in. They have no shaychus to the world. They're dead. They have no shaychus to the crops. They have no shaychus to the hail. It doesn't affect them at all. It totally doesn't matter. And that's what they're interested in. They're going around and gossiping. And this young woman also, who's dead. Who cares if she has eye makeup and a comb? But she's vain in her life and she's vain after death. And just because she dies, it does not change her essential personality. Right? It doesn't change her personality. It doesn't change the things that she cares about. The things that she cared about in her life, both all three of these women, are the same things that they care about after their death. Okay? That's why Rav Dessler brought that here. Because that's his thesis, isn't it? The things that we care about define us. And who we are doesn't change after death. So the things that you care about in your life are the same kinds of things that you will care about in your death. Okay? And he goes on. So that's the basis that we had to get from that Gemara. Let's go back to Rav Dessler.
Wait, sorry, Connor, can I just ask?
Yes.
Okay, so, like, I understand, like, we're going to get to, like, a lesson about, like, you know, like, well, whatever. Okay, I understand that. I'm just kind of confused, like, how is that, like, a realistic thing that, like, I'm just so confused, like, what, these neshamot came back and they're, like, half here and they're, like, talking about
good,
things. Like,
good, good, Yasmin, mean? Good, good. He's going there. I promise you he's going there right now. Let's go, okay?
Thanks.
Here he goes. You're awesome. Exactly. You're exactly right. Here we go. Ready? Okay, so he quoted this Misha Me. So over here, can you see my little cursor thing? Yeah. Thank you, Dina Brecht, again for nodding. Good, everyone else too. Okay, good. So he quotes Misha Meso, and then we just did this. We're going to skip over here, okay? And he goes this. So again, he talks about Rishayim, right? Let's say you have someone who's essentially evil. So let's say what they care about the most in the world is power, right? You read Harry Potter, you read Lord of the Rings, right? You read about these essential bad guy evil characters, right? The thing they care about most is dominance and power. So when Rishayim die, you know what they still care about? Dominance and power. But what do they have no shaychus to at all as a dead person? Any dominance over anyone who's alive, right? But they don't magically stop caring about it. They still care about dominance and power. So what happens? Here he goes, ready? Ravon zeh shel rechaim. L'tavas afilu achar musam. Right? They still want something, but they want something that has no shaychus to them, even after they die. Yitzchafim l'chapish achareyim mikseh ha'ulam v'yakitiu. And they search the world for their own dominance, for their own power. V'zehu geder onesh kafakela. Okay, Yasmin, this is exactly answering you. There's a name for this phenomenon. Okay, it's a punishment, it's an onesh, and it's called kaf hakela. The official, technical translation of kaf hakela is like a slingshot, okay? You could say like a catapult, right? Their souls get slingshotted, get catapulted around the world, looking and looking and looking for something that they had no shaychus to. Okay, and he says that's what we mean when Chazal say that the punishment of a chait is the chait, right? There's a mefurash pirkei avos that says schar mitzvah uschar veira veira. Schar mitzvah goreres mitzvah va'avera goreres avera goreres avera sheschar mitzvah uschar avera avera. Right? That's in I think perik bez in pirkei avos. That the reward of a mitzvah is a mitzvah, and the reward of an avera is an avera, right? Rabbeinu Yonah, in Rabbeinu Yonah's typical style, comes down very hard and says this is not literal. Otherwise, what's the point? It's very nihilistic to say, well, if I keep Shabbos, my mitzvah is that I kept Shabbos. My schar is that I kept Shabbos. And if I do an avera, if I eat non-kosher, my onesh is that I ate non-kosher. Shkoyach, I'll take that. Right? Okay, I'll eat non-kosher. What's the point? If that's my only onesh, like, what's the point? So he says here, no. This is the onesh. This is the onesh of the avera that you do. Ready? She'onesh shemayim v'chait echad heim. Right? Again, we have this principle that the onesh and the chait are the same thing. What does that mean? Perish she'koach hatuma she'notzar bekerav hachote. Right? When you do a chait, automatically, essentially, when you make any choice, a chait or not a chait, you create a certain power, a certain koach within you. You create a piece of yourself that cares about something. Right? You create something within you. Al yidei hachit. So if you decide to do something wrong, you create a power that decides to do something wrong. But al yidei hachit hu atzmo hakoach hamani shasa adam. And that's the koach that punishes you because of kafakela. So again, let's talk about a personal example. Let's say, you know, you don't want to wait 6 hours between meat and milk because you had meat and you really just want to have your piece of cheesecake and you're annoyed about it. So, you know, you wait an hour and a half and then no one's looking and you eat a piece of cheesecake, okay? Fine. So he says, you know, it can't be, okay, well, that's what's punishing you. No, that's it. No, what did you do? What's the punishment? Is that you created within yourself a certain koach by making that choice. What koach did you create within yourself? You created the koach of self-gratification, immediate gratification, right? Let's say, or selfishness. I want what I want and I want it right now. So that's what you created. And let's say you keep making choices like that. Okay? And then you die. So what koach have you created in your own nefesh? You've created the koach, that very strong within you, of immediate gratification. You want what you want and you want it right now. But guess what? Then you're dead. And you can't have what you want and you certainly can't have it right now. And that's what punishes you because you stay that person. You stay that person who wants what they want and they want it right now, but you have no shaychus to that anymore after you're dead. And that's what punishes you, right? It's a beautiful read of that kind of philosophy. Onesh shemayim v'chait acharim. Okay, right? Because ayideh chot, sheyodeh, sherak achar onesh kafakela. Okay, so then he says again this, that only, that kafakela is the lowest level, it's underneath Gehenna, right? That the owner of Rav, I don't know who that is, Rav Shmuel Zalman, I'm not sure, says, halavai sheyizke achoti legehenna. It would be nice if everyone was zocha to Gehenna. Kafakela is under Gehenna. Perish ki Gehenna in yano charato birur. Because at least in Gehenna you feel bad about what you do. In Kafakela you don't feel bad. Af Kafakela he galus no ra. It's an exile. It's a beautiful word, an exile. What does an exile mean? It means you're in the wrong place. You're not at home, right? You're in exile. Kafakele hi galus nura. It's a horrible exile. Shachipush achare masha iefshar limtso sham. You're looking and looking for something that you can't get after death. Okay? Ubekafakele atma in tikun. Elosh arazman mishkach hazalat. And he says basically there's no cure for kafakele. Just you forget it after time. And really, basically, he says it's better to come back as a rock. It would have been better for that for those women in the graveyard to come back as a rock and to come back as people who are obsessed with gossip, are obsessed with what's going on in the world, and have no shyness to it. Dina Bracha, tell me what you just unmuted yourself for.
I just have a quick question. I don't know if you know the answer or if he goes over this, but like, to what extent do you have to do that avera, or does it have to become so a part of you to merit, not merit, but to...
Good. Okay, good.
Kafakele versus Gehenna.
Very good, very good. So he doesn't really talk about that. I don't really think that's the point. I mean, the point here is not to scare us, right? The point here is to show us what happens when we choose something, and that happens all the time, right? It's not just that you have to do something so, right? It's that if I'm consistently making choice, every time I make a choice, I create something within me, and that thing within me sticks, whether or not it's good or bad. Right? Every time I say to myself, I'm going to do chabura, even though I'm tired this week, what I create inside of myself is the love of achrayas, right? And the love of learning. Every time I say, it's hard and I'm going to do it anyways, right? I create within myself. And every time I say to myself, I'm just too tired, I'm going to cancel it, I create within myself a certain atzlus, a certain like, I'm putter if I don't feel like it. Right? And both of those things, every time, and it's every time I make a choice about anything, right? I create a piece of myself. And those pieces of ourselves that we create do not go away. They do not go away. They stick. But again, tshuva, in a certain capacity, hits there. That's what he says. Tshuva is not on our ma'asim only, basically. It's not about, oh, that I made that choice to eat dairy after I ate meat. You're not doing tshuva on the action of I chose to eat dairy after meat. You're doing tshuva. What is tshuva? Tshuva has to hit at what you created within yourself when you made those choices. Tshuva has to go much deeper, right? Tshuva is, I know that I created certain potentialities, certain pieces of myself that are havinu, hirshanu, zadnu, chamasnu, right? That created in me something that I wanna hit at. Okay, and that's where he's going here. Okay. So let me give you an example. I don't know if any of you guys said this. Ayala Shahar, to give her a shout out, just sent me like a fantastic article. I don't know what you want to call it, article, post, that encouraged me to do this even more. I was planning to do it anyways, but encouraged me even more. You should ask Ayala for it. But it's basically like, you know, be real, educators, Torah teachers, right? Like, talk about yourself. Talk about yourself for real. So again, I had it. Chazdei Hashem, you know, I'm going to be very real with you guys, and I'm trusting you here. Okay, when I read this, I know what my kafakele is, 100%. I'm sure I have multiple of them. I don't know if any of you guys felt that. But when I read this, I was like, I know exactly what I will be after my death looking around the world for that I will not find. So I will tell you what it is, and then we'll work with that, because I want to give you an example so you see where it's going. So my obsession, my little obsession here is like mattering. Okay, I need to matter in the world. I will die. If I die tonight, I will die, and I will spend my death looking around the world for whether or not I made any difference in the world. Whether or not people are talking about me, whether or not what I did, you know, changed things, and if it changed things enough to qualify me as mattering. You know, sometimes when you like say something out loud and you don't even know that you really mean it until you say it out loud. So I was one time trying to explain to someone the extent of this like piece of me, how much I, you know, needed this. And I said, you know, they could have a parade and the parade could be like called the Chana Matters Parade. And I could be in a center float in the parade. And after the parade, I would leave and I would say, but did I really? And until I said that out loud, I was like, wow, I didn't actually know that I thought that, but I did. Okay. So again, it's not a beautiful piece of myself. I'm not sharing that to like pat myself on the shoulder, but okay. That's my kavakela. Okay. So I am consistently making choices about whether or not to do something or not to do something, about whether or not it matters enough or not. Okay. So let's like have that as our basis. And I'll give you some examples based on that. Okay. But let's go on. So again, so that's part of the kafakele, right? It's not just me, like, it could be, again, in the stories, part of their kafakele, let's say, of the two undead, or the dead, partially dead, zombie-ish women, right? What did they care about? What they cared about was, like, gossip, right? What they cared about was like the haq. The other one, what she cared about was like her own beauty, right? She cared about vanity. She cared about how she looked, right? Those are things, again, that don't go away. But it could be like a, and again, like I know where my kavakela comes from, and I'm not blaming myself, so to speak. Like it makes sense to me in terms of my own story of my life. It's just something that it's like, I don't want to do that when I'm dead. I really don't want to continue looking around the world in this slingshot kind of way for like, you know, until, and I, it would have been better for me to come back as a rock, okay? So let's keep going. Let's keep going. And we'll see. He's going to give us like a little hint, okay? If you're trying to find your kafakela, if you're trying to find a place where you could start working on tshuva, okay? Here he goes. Mitzad Hasheni. So he says, on the other hand, again, Rishayim spend their lives as kafakela, right? Tzadikim, he basically says, don't, okay? And then there's this quote, the Hanachel Ohava Yesh. This yesh, this substance within tzaddikim, includes everything. Their tol olam haba exists already within themselves. This is like the first ingredient of tshuva. This is the first ingredient of getting Chana out of her kafakela and anyone else who has one that came to them fast. And again, on all the choices that we have accidentally made that have created some koach within us, which is what? Anyone who drives after, anyone who desires after, who wants something badly that is outside of themselves, zela os she'avad atzmo mimenu. It's a sign that he's lost himself. Kierei enenu od imatzmo, imenani lemilek, etc., etc. So the first way of understanding that we're off somewhere is when we need something outside of ourselves. Again, in my example, right, that's my kafakela. I need to feel that I matter. That's, I think, fair. But where am I looking for it? I'm looking for it always in other people. I'm looking for it in the parade and I can't find it. I'm looking for it after I die, right, in all these little places in the world. I'm looking, my need to matter suddenly, or a big piece of myself is now not in myself anymore. It's outside of me. And I'm searching and I'm searching and I'm searching for it. And that's the first piece that's off. Anytime that we need something, it's a fascinating principle, isn't it? Anytime that we need something that's outside of ourselves, for ourselves, it's already an indication that we're on the wrong path. Okay, here we go, 1 second. Going on to the second page. Okay, and the Rambam talks about Shifrei Tzadikim Gemurim. So again, Tzadikim Gemurim, they already did Tshuva before Rosh Hashanah. And Rishayim have no Shaychus to Tshuva, basically, in terms of where they are anyways, okay? Ubeinonim, us, the Beinonim. Ela Shemitchalvim V'holchim Migadlus Lekantnus. We are Beinonim. Mimatzav Shemitzius L'masav Shel Dimyon. We are Beinonim. Where do we stand when we talk about this? Again, I'm not a Russia, but I have a certain pieces of me that are kafakela. And he says, that's what we are as Beinonim. We have pieces of ourselves that have massive amounts of shaychus to substance, to things that are real in the world. Right? We have pieces of ourselves that resonate with that and that are that. And we also have pieces of ourselves that are totally not. Right? I have pieces of myself that's always looking to matter in this way that is outside of myself, and that's krum. Right? And I have a bunch of other krum stuff that I do, don't worry, right? So that's what it means to be a Beinoni. There's two sides of ourselves that are very real. That are very real. Beinoni b'shteyem b'leiv, b'shteyem she'ifa panimis, right? Greatness and kindness are both in my heart. And shtam she'ifa panimis, and they're real. They're real internal drives, both my own greatness and my own weakness. Ela shechofos heim zo achar zu. They switch with each other, right? They cycle back and forth. Pam bakach, bakam bakach. Kimi sheyesh bo stir panimis hu margish busha amuka me'od. Somebody who has those two pieces inside of them will feel a deep embarrassment. Okay, so not like a Russia who it's only chitzonis. Okay, so this is where this is the piece that blew my mind about this particular mimer. Busha, when he talks about busha, busha is where tshuva starts. Okay, based on the principles that we just got. What is busha? We tend to identify busha or define busha as embarrassment. Okay? Busha is not, it's not embarrassment. Busha is the negative feeling that we feel when we're incongruent. Okay? See what he did there? He defined this feeling of being a Benoni, that you have a piece of you that's great, and you have a piece of you that's, I don't, what's the opposite of great? That's weak, that's gross, right? Godless. You have a piece of you that's godless, and you have a piece of you that's godless, and they're both real inside of you. That emotion that it elicits within you is busha. Busha is not embarrassment, it's incongruence. Okay, that's the quotes that I was trying to find from Carl Rogers. I would not have known that word without him. Carl Rogers' theory is that all pathology in man, small or great, right? Any unhealthy tendencies that we have as a human being comes from incongruence. Incongruence means that you have a part of you that's something and a part of you that's something else, and they don't work together yet, right? Again, we gave a few examples of this. You can have someone who goes to a party, let's say, and they say, I'm in a conversation with Yasmin, and me and Yasmin are having a conversation, and I start going like this, and I start gesturing, blah, 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 and she says to me, Hana, don't get so angry. And I'm like, I'm not angry. Okay, so that's incongruence. I'm not lying. I don't know that I'm angry, right? I'm incongruent because I'm unaware of myself, right? Or Yasmin can host a party, and I can go to the party, and I'm bored out of my mind, and I decide I have to stay for at least 30 minutes, and at exactly 30 minutes, I walk up, and I say to her, Yasmin, that was such a nice party. Thanks so much for inviting me. Okay, now I'm incongruent, but I'm incongruent for a different reason, because what I show and who I am is different. Right? Both of those are the roots of pathology. Busha comes from that. Busha comes from an internal incongruence. What we do is not who we are, and we know it. That's why the things that we do, that we feel embarrassed about, that is the key to starting tshuva there. So again, let's give an example. I have like a bunch of other sources that I want to talk about this, because I actually really, really love this idea this year. Let's talk about the examples, okay? Because we're a little bit also short on time. So let's talk about my need to matter, right? So I said to myself, again, reading this mimer, I said to myself, at what point do I feel embarrassed? Where is there a place, I mean, besides for just generally about the whole thing, but is there a point in my life where I feel, it's not embarrassed, it's busha, where I feel incongruent about my need to matter, okay? And I came up with one specific situation that happens to me relatively frequently, okay? And you guys are going to laugh, and you're going to be like, okay, we totally know this about you already, Hana, you don't even have to be embarrassed telling us about this, right? I am a total Torah snob. Okay, but I'm going to actually tell you to what extent I am a Torah snob, and you will forgive me. Okay, I am a Torah snob. When people, we have like a women's shir at shul every Shabbos, okay? So I'm not just a Torah, I'm a Torah, I'm going to, okay, ready guys, here we go. This is what happens in my head every time there's a woman's shir. And I only really, really realized it after I read this. And I decided that this is the thing that I'm going to work on based on this mimer. And then I went to a woman's shir and really paid attention to the voice happening in my head. And it is incessant, okay? I go like this. The speaker is not speaking well. They totally butchered that quote. That is not what the quote was actually saying. Okay, maybe that was what the quote was saying, but they should have said it in a different way. Hana's like laughing her head off at me, right? Exactly. She's like, I know you do that. This does not surprise me at all. Right? But like, it's like every single thing. He just quoted, why did he quote that? He should have quoted Rabbeinu Yonah on that. That would have been a much better source. La, 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 la. Okay, on and on and on and on. And I think to myself, and I'm being told, I think to myself, I hope everyone in this room realizes that I would have done so much better of a job teaching that. And then I think, why are they asking this person to teach? Why don't they just ask me to do this every single Shabbos in shul? Right? Again, so that's the dialogue consistently in my head. Where does it come from? It comes from my need to matter, right? I need to be the best speaker. I need to be the best Torah teacher. I need to do the best job at this. And my need to do that requires me, it puts me in a situation where I put everybody else down. I have to put them all down because I need to have the parade. Remember, I'm the star of the Chana Matters. Who matters in the world? I'm the star of that parade. And I need to be. So everyone else I need to squash, right? And I feel embarrassed about that, right? That's a piece where I feel embarrassed. And why do I feel embarrassed about it? Because I have shaychus to something else. I have shaychus. I already understand that there's a piece of me that doesn't work with. And what's that piece of me? It's the godless within me. Which godless within me? It's my love of learning. It's my love of learning. I love, again, when we have the strengths thing, right? That's why we have to start with, this is the conversation that always happens around Yamim No Ra'im, right? Are we focusing on the things that we're weak on, or are we focusing on the things that are strong on, right? And everyone's like, where do we start? Do we start where we're weak, or do we start where we're strong? Well, this is the point. In order to ever feel incongruence, which we, it's a good thing. We want to feel busha. We have to feel busha. That's where tshuva starts. But to feel busha, you have to have two parts of you. The part of you that knows what you're good at and your what we call your ideal self, right? That has a vision of who you could be. You need to have shaychus to that. Otherwise, you'll never feel embarrassed about doing something wrong. And you also have to have the parts of you that feels embarrassed about doing something wrong. You can't just have the part of you that's so great. If you have a tshuva drasha that's like, you're so great, that's not tshuva. It's great. It's self-esteem. It might be nice. It has nothing to do with tshuva. But if you have a piece of you that's like, you're bad, you're bad, you're bad, it also has nothing to do with tshuva. Because tshuva has to start with those two pieces at war within us. The piece where we know what we could be is at war with a piece of ourselves that are making choices that are not aligned with that. Alignment maybe is a better word than congruence, right? I need to make myself more aligned. And the places where I feel unaligned, that's where I'll feel busha. I'll feel this negative feeling of that comes from misalignment within me. So again, when I sit there, part of me feels, again, like part of me is in my kafakela, right? I'm trying to prove in my own mind that I matter by putting someone else down. And part of me is embarrassed because I have shaychus to something else. Why do I have shaychus to something else? Because that's not my ideal self. My ideal self isn't just someone who doesn't put someone down. My ideal self is someone who could learn from everyone. That's who I want to be, guys. That's why I love learning. That's why I'm on this chabura, because I love to learn. I genuinely love to learn. And when I'm sitting in that class and instead of learning, I'm struggling with my kafakela, those are the two pieces at war within me. And that's where I have to start, right? My tshuva has to start there. It starts where I feel embarrassed. Let me be also completely frank with you, okay? I have a lot of issues, let's say, in terms of kibud av va'im. I have no busha there. I don't have busha to it because I don't have shaychus to something else at the moment. I hope I do in 10 years from now. Right now, I don't. I don't have shaychus to that piece of a piece of greatness at war with it. It's not. It's just this piece of me. I don't understand the interaction between the greatness. I don't. Right? So I have pieces of myself that I know are off. I have pieces of myself where I know are struggling, and I have no shaychus to that war. But I pick a piece where I feel that busha, where I feel the misalignment. So again, what was my Kabbalah this year, so to speak, for tshuva? I need to work on that kafakela. How? By becoming more the person who's going to learn from everyone. Right? So I said to myself, instead of avoiding those women's shiur, and that's what I do every time there's a woman's shiur, I say to Jeff, I don't know, should I go, should I not go? Because if I go, I always get mad at the world. And if I don't go, then I feel bad. Right? So that's the piece. If I go, my kafakela is like beating them down. And if I don't go, then I feel like I'm not being true to myself because I want to be someone who goes to learning and who could learn from other people. So that's what I need to do. I need to become more my ideal self and less my kafakela. So I said to myself, I'm going to go to every women's shiur, and I'm going to sit there and I'm going to learn something because I love to learn. And I'm going to learn something that I could teach because I love to teach. And that's who I want to be. I want to be that person who could sit there and could learn from anyone no matter what. Something that touches me enough that I want to give it over to somebody else. And again, I had prepared this like last week. There was a woman's shiur also last week. And I sat there and again, the when I was paying attention to it, the tirade in my mind was relentless about how the speaker was, and why are they, come on, I can't believe everyone, they're the only speaker who spoke twice, why did they even invite him to speak twice, right? And I kept saying to myself, at some point I took a deep breath, right? I was like underneath my mask, thank God, and I was like, hey, calm down those voices, Hannah, calm down those voices. Like, what can you learn? Pick something. What here can you learn? And he gave me a source that I'm going to give you right now for exactly our concept on busha. He said, it was like fantastic. He didn't, again, he was not teaching it in the way that, like, how do I say this? He was not teaching it in a way that I would have taught it. And I still learned something from him. And it was fantastic. And this is where I put the pieces together about busha and incongruence and all of this stuff. And it was amazing. It was amazing, like Hagufa experience. And I'm teaching what I learned in that class, trying to learn from it. This is what I learned about busha and incongruence. And he says, again, one of the pieces that we say in Vidui, I love it. It always, every year it struck me and I never quite knew what it meant, right? But it's one of my favorite lines in Vidui for some reason. Who has favorite lines in Vidui? I don't know. We all do, I guess. We have to have a favorite something, right? But it says, Asarnu mi mitzvasecha u mishpatecha hatovim ve'in shavelanu. right? We left your mitzvos and from your and your good principles, ve'in shava lanu, which we translated as it's not worth it for us. But that's not what shava means. Shava means it's not equal. And there you have this again, mefurash. Ein shava lanu. We were not aligned with ourselves. We did something wrong, and it's not who I am. That's what you say. I chose to do something wrong, right? I had this war with these two pieces inside of me that are on the same level, right? It's the flip side of the same thing. And I chose to do what's bad. And v'lo shava lanu. It's not equal. I was not equal to who I could be. And that's the tshuva that we do. That's why tshuva starts there. It starts at that war. You pick a place where you feel that busha, where you feel incongruous, where you feel embarrassed, right? And you notice the two sides of you, the greatness that's at war with the cottonness inside of you. And you say, ein shava lanu. That's not what I'm worth. I know I'm worth more than that. I know that in this battle, I can pick which side I'm going to pay more attention to. And I can create a strategy in which the side of me that's my ideal self of who I could be and who I already have access to, that side could win here. And that's how we start tshuva process, right? That's how you pick something to work on. That's what you focus on. And that's how you get out of your kafakela and you create something inside of you that will stick with you. It's an incredible chizuk, right? Incredible chizuk. Incredible. The things that you care about now stay. And the work that you do on your soul is eternal. And that's what we're trying to do here in tshuva. It's huge stakes. And it's awesome to think about. Questions?
I have a question.
Please.
This is a lot to think about, and I think it's awesome, honestly. I was just thinking, you're extremely self-aware. So, obviously from what I'm noticing, but for somebody who might not know, like, if the greatness is there, do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like there are a bunch of things that, like, could be embarrassing or could be something that's incongruent, but you don't know what the greatness other side is. Because for your example, like you were saying that you love to learn and you're doing this because you can do it better, like quote unquote. But for some things, I feel like there might not be such a congruence, and I'm trying to figure out like how you figure out the good part.
Shira, I'm so happy you asked that because I have this a lot. By the time I teach a chabura, I have already spent hours thinking about it. So I spent probably close to 10 to 12 hours thinking about this before I taught it. So it's like, then I teach it as if like I knew it as soon as I read it. It's not. As soon as I read it, I thought, I know what my kafakela is, right? But then I said to myself, like, what is Rav Dessler telling me to do? And then at some point, I cut out all the sources. That's why my source sheet looks like this. You know what I mean? It looks like I cut out because I did. And then I reorganized Rav Dessler about the way that I thought he should put it. And then I thought, like, no, actually, maybe I should teach it the way that he actually did put it. So I put it back into order. You know what I mean? Like, I did. I have this page. Can you see my notebook? Okay, so this is the page that I'm teaching from. And it goes on to the next page. It goes on to this page. Okay, and I have this page of notes and this page of notes, and then this was page of notes was me trying to get it, and this page of notes was me trying to get it, and this page of notes was me trying to get it, and this page of notes was me trying to get it. And by the way, so was this page and this page. Okay, so by the time I actually, and this one, sorry, I have another one. So by the time I actually get here, like, it was really hard. This is the, and you're right, Shira, like, amen. It's a hard one because it really asks you to go deep, but that's the process of tshuva, right? That's why I can't really stand me being a Torah snob. Here we are back here again, guys, right? Like, people are like, tshuva's all about, like, pick something and pick a little thing and do it right. Tshuva's something about, like, realize how great you are and pick a little thing and do it right. It's like, yes, but tshuva is actually this massive process where we have to hit our souls. You have to hit that deep. You have to hit deep. You have to. Otherwise, like, it's nice. And I'm sure Hashem takes into account everything. But is it tshuva? I don't know. Tshuva has to really hit deep. It has to hit a piece where you're reworking what you've done to your soul. That's the stakes. That's what Vessler's talking about. And Shira, you're totally right. It takes so long. It takes so long to figure out. And again, that's why I like Rav Dessler's, is like, he at least gives us the place to start. You start in one place where you feel embarrassed. Not one place where you feel like you should. I can give you a bunch of like shoulds. But then I can give you some places where I feel like I have shaykhahs to something that's better. That's where I have to start. Because that's where there's a misalignment already. And then I say to myself, like, Shira, right? Like, so, okay, I started with the kafakela because I knew what my kafakela was. Some people don't. But then you start with a place that's busha, right? And you say to yourself, when Chana said to me, what place do you feel busha? Something in my gut spoke this one thing that I know that I do, right? Let's say it's like, I don't daven every day. Okay, or I don't know, maybe that's like, I don't wash nugget boss every day. I don't know, whatever it is, right? Let's say that I don't daven every day. So then you say to yourself, well, why was that the first thing that came up? Right? Okay, so that was the first thing that came up in my soul. What are the two pieces that are at war, right? What's the piece of myself when I choose not to daven? What energy am I creating within myself? And what strength do I already have that gives me shaykhus to something else? And how can I call upon that here? Because that's who I really am. That's more shaveli. That's more equal to who I really am. And how do I make those align more, right? And that's where the process starts. But it's a lot. It's really hard. This was a really hard one, Shira. I'm happy you said that. It was really hard. More questions. Yasmin.
It's not really a question. I just had to say that I really, really, really like this.
Thank you.
And like, I feel like I'm just going to like, I really want to sit after, like, I hope I actually do it, and, like, really, like, try to figure out, like, what it is, but I feel like it's just, like, a little hard, you know, to, like, figure that out.
Yes. It is hard. I'm gonna, by the way, you guys have my number. I have a cell phone. You guys can totally call me, and if you want to, like, schmooze it out or work it out, like, I'm here all week, so please call me. Like, I like this kind of stuff. This is Avodas Hashem, and it's really hard, and if you, again, you want to have a conversation about it, you know where to find me, so call me. I'm going to stop the recording, though.